KEXP thanks contributing donors and the Real Networks Foundation for supporting Mind Over Matters.
This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Ted Sturtevant, director of the Washington State Department of Ecology. Ted Sturtevant is here today to tell us about the need to reform regulation of toxic chemicals at the federal level and the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010, which was introduced in the U.S. House and Senate on April 15th. Welcome, Ted.
Thank you for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Washington State Department of Ecology?
Yes. One of our top priorities at the Department of Ecology is what we call reducing toxic threats. And it's one of our five strategic priorities at the agency, and it's something that Ecology has been pushing hard on for several years now and is really one of the leaders in the country on chemical policy reform. Ecology, it's the state's environmental protection agency. We deal with air, land, water, and we find that so many things come back to toxics and so many things come back to the need to prevent toxics. And so, you know, that's, I think, what we're really here to talk about is how do we do a much better job on the prevention side of toxics.
Would you like to say just a bit more about how Ecology has addressed the problem of toxic chemicals in Washington State?
Sure. When we think about the work on toxics and toxic chemicals, there's three categories. One is cleanup, cleaning up contaminated messes. Another is management. How do we manage those toxic substances that are in commerce out there, whether they're intended for use in manufacturing or whether they're wastes from industrial processes? And then there's prevention. How do we prevent toxic exposures, contaminations, releases? On cleanup, we invest a lot of money in this state on cleaning up old contaminated sites. A huge number of dollars every year are spent there. And we oversee that program. We have a toxic cleanup program. And then we have a hazardous waste and toxics reduction program, which is responsible for regulating businesses that generate hazardous waste. So there's a lot of inspections and compliance work and trying to make sure that folks are dealing with those hazardous substances in ways that don't lead to environmental releases. But when it comes to prevention, that's a hard nut to crack, and it's something that historically we haven't really invested much in. We haven't really had good tools for. So for the past few years, we've been really scratching our heads and focusing on how do we do a much better job on the prevention side? Because when you prevent toxic uses and releases, then the management of those and ultimately the cleanup can, you know, shrink or go away. So we're really trying to sort of flip this pyramid so that we're both moving and investing on the prevention side much more effectively. Right now, it's really flipped around. A lot of investment in cleanup, not so much on prevention.
Up to now, the policy framework for regulation of toxic chemicals at the federal level has been the 1976 Toxic Substances Control Act. In your view, what's wrong with the current federal policy in regard to regulation of chemicals?
Well, first, I'll step back and say that, you know, this isn't about are chemicals good or bad. Chemicals are a huge part of our life. They're very intertwined with what we do in modern life. So they can be good, but they can be bad if released and if we're exposed to them, if the environment is contaminated with them. So the question is, how do we manage chemicals so that we get the good and avoid the bad? And the federal law that oversees chemical management is the Toxic Substance Control Act of 1976, or TSCA. And that is the only major environmental law that was passed in the 70s that has not been updated since then. So it's really quite outdated. And briefly, here's how it works now. It basically assumed when it was passed that existing chemicals were pretty much okay. So existing chemicals, tens of thousands of them, were pretty much grandfathered in. It also said if you as a manufacturer say that your data is confidential business information and therefore not accessible to the public, then you can pretty much say that. And it will be good forever, that protection. And the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, has to prove there's a risk before they can act. And EPA is not given the authority or resources to require data. So they're put in this catch-22 situation where rather than manufacturers having to show that their product is safe, EPA has to show it's a problem. but they don't have the tools to really determine whether it's a problem or not. And then when they do, on those rare occasions when they do, they have very limited authority to do anything about it. The poster child for that problem is asbestos. EPA tried to ban asbestos under TSCA, and it was found they didn't have the legal authority to do so. So when your federal chemical policy doesn't even allow you to ban a substance like asbestos, you know, I think that points to a problem. So fundamentally, TSCA, as it's written now, is based on a presumption that chemicals are okay, and it's okay to use them in widespread commerce unless an underfunded federal agency can show to the contrary. And I think that's just exactly backwards. So that's what TSCA looks like to us today. It's why we at the Department of Ecology, the Washington State Legislature, several other states have been really pushing this envelope for years, because that federal system just isn't in place. The federal system that would protect us isn't in place, so we're trying to create a more protective fabric at the state level.
How have the deficiencies at the federal level specifically affected the ability of Washington State to protect its citizens?
Well, a good case study, I think, is PBDEs, PBDE flame retardants, polybrominated diphenyl ethers. This was a battle that was waged in Washington. And as we, let's see, it was 2003 when we really started looking at PBDEs, hearing about these flame retardants. More and more studies were showing that they were showing up in women's breast milk, in the environment, in polar bears, in the Arctic. You know, these things were traveling across the world, showing up in the Spokane River in high levels. So as we started looking at them, and we didn't know much about them, the more we looked, the more concerned we got. But we didn't have the authority to do anything about that. And there was no action being taken at the federal level. So we had greater and greater concern, both from an environmental perspective and a human health perspective, about this toxic substance that was just, you know, it was coming out of computers and TVs in the home. So there was exposure happening in the home, and then there was also getting into water and really traveling across the landscape. And it was just going on, and we had to sit there and watch this unfold, and there was no data really to be gained from the EPA. So we had to go out and look for data on this, learn about these. There was a lot of research done. And, you know, in an ideal world, what would happen is these things wouldn't be allowed to be placed in commerce until they were really shown to be safe. And then there would be a mechanism when you do learn more and realize there's a problem, as was the case several years ago with PBDEs, that there would be a mechanism that got triggered to do something about it. Well, there was no mechanism to trigger. So what we ended up doing was we spent a lot of time, a lot of state resources. We did what's called a chemical action plan on PBDEs. We spent literally years working on this one chemical, leading up to a bill in the Washington State Legislature to ban all forms of PBDEs. And the legislature did that, and it was the first bill, it was the first ban of all PBDEs to pass in the country. But it took an enormous amount of resources, took a lot of time. We passed that bill a few years ago, but it didn't go into effect, doesn't go into effect actually, on one form of it, the most widespread form, until January of 2011. So we started looking at it in 2003. Goes into effect 2011. That's 8 years of ongoing use and ongoing, therefore, exposure in the environment that could have been avoided had there been a better system in place.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ted Sturtevant, Director of the Washington State Department of Ecology. Our topic is the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. So now Congress is acting to update the regulation of toxic chemicals and has introduced the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010. What's in the bill?
Well, we're still looking at the bills. There's a lot to digest, but there's some very promising elements in the bill. One is that there's something called a minimum data set that EPA would be authorized to require. So if you're going to put a chemical out there on the market, you have to provide a certain amount of data to EPA first. And then you have to show that your chemical or your product meets a safety standard. So the EPA would be allowed to establish a standard and say, if you want to put this out there, You have to show that it meets this standard. And that flips this whole thing upside down. Right now, as I said, there's a presumption that your product is okay unless EPA can show otherwise. Now they're saying, hey, if you want to put it out there, you have to first show that it's safe. It gives EPA the authority to prioritize chemicals and then create a list, starting with 300 chemicals to go after first and find out, hey, do these meet this safety standard or not? It gives EPA real authority to do something about chemicals when they find there are problems, including bans. And it also, for new uses of existing chemicals or new chemicals, it creates a process where those would have to meet this safety standard as well. Also, it allows for much more access to data. It narrows that confidential business information exemption that I talked about. And it also, I'm particularly happy about this piece, it does not preempt states from continuing to do work at the state level. And that's going to be part of the battle here, because industry is certainly going to be interested in preventing states from taking state-specific acts to regulate chemicals. And I think TSCA is a perfect example. It was passed in 76. The gains that have been made in protecting citizens and the environment from toxic exposures have happened at the state level. So to do away with that and assume that for the coming decades, this one bill will take care of it and the states therefore cannot act to protect their own states, I think would be a really bad choice.
Would you say more about what's being required in the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010 in regard to existing chemicals that are out there on the market right now?
And this is still new to us. We're actually just sitting down this morning to digest this. And I also have to say that the House staff has engaged us and a group of other states who have weighed in on this and is asking for our input, which is very gratifying, because that's one of the things that we really tried to do, was establish ourselves as a voice in this debate. So in terms of what would be required of existing chemicals, the manufacturers would have to report what data they have on toxicity, on use and exposure. So they submit that to EPA. EPA then has the ability to say, does this look like it's going to cause a problem? If we think it isn't, then they can decide that it meets the safety standard. This is after they set a safety standard. So if it doesn't meet that safety standard, then manufacturers have to provide more data and show that they meet that safety standard. And if they don't meet the safety standard, then EPA can use its authority, a set of tools, including bans, to stop it. So basically, even those existing chemicals that right now are sort of grandfathered and are legal, all of those would have to go through this EPA process. And you know, I talked about that prioritization piece. They'd be allowed to prioritize which of those existing chemicals go first. So they'd create a list of at least 300 chemicals that are existing today, and those would have to go through this EPA process and either be found to meet this new safety standard or not meet this new safety standard. And if not, then EPA has the authority to do something about it.
For the chemicals that don't make the list of 300, what kind of timeline is there for those to be adequately examined?
Well, that's a good question, and there's a different answer in the two different bills. In the House bill, I believe that it contemplates EPA cycling through all of those existing chemicals in a period of 5 years. In the Senate bill, it contemplates doing so over the course of 14 years. So that'll obviously be something that gets worked out. And that brings up a question, which is, what are the resources that EPA is going to be given to do this work?
Right, the funding and who does the testing.
Right, because, you know, you can say 5 years. There's more than 80,000 chemicals in use out there today. So to do this work, cycling through that many chemicals is going to take a lot of resources, and it's going to take some time.
And who will provide the resources?
Well, that's a good question and an important one. The answer to that really is, what kind of support is Congress going to give to EPA? I mean, EPA has very clearly said, we don't have the resources to do the work we're supposed to do today. So new resources are going to have to come from Congress to EPA to do this work.
Could it come partly from the chemical industry?
There's a lot of support for that. I mean, and I think it makes a lot of sense. This work is being done to ensure that their products are safe for the American public and environment, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
Looking at the bill, would you comment also on the proposed program to assist communities that are disproportionately impacted by toxic chemicals?
That's the hotspots piece. That piece also, I only know the basics of. I'm encouraged by it. I think the environmental justice aspect of this is a critical one. And I think there are great examples here in Seattle and in South Seattle where folks with less money often find themselves in neighborhoods where they're exposed to more pollution and toxic chemicals, and I think that's a terrible thing. And so the inclusion of that piece in here is very encouraging.
Would you also just briefly comment on the proposal in the bills to protect at-risk or vulnerable populations such as children?
Well, and this is one of the principles that we've pushed. Last December, Washington State got together with 12 other states, and we issued to Congress a set of TSCA reform principles from leadership states on this. And one of them was to protect the most vulnerable. And really what that means is as you're making these very important hazard and risk determinations, is this safe or not? You need to be thinking about that and making that decision based on those among us who are most vulnerable. And really, fetuses are at the top of that list. I mean, they're so incredibly sensitive to neurodevelopmental toxins, and the number of chemicals that get delivered often through cord blood is astounding. I don't mean to be alarmist here, but it just points to the need for prevention, and it points to the need that as we're thinking about what is safe, what is a safe level of exposure out there, you know, don't be thinking about it for someone like me who can absorb probably a fair amount of chemicals and not be injured or at least have it not be visibly apparent. Have it be calibrated for the little people who are really impacted by this stuff.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ted Sturtevant, director of the Washington State Department of Ecology. Our topic is the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010. Would you also comment on what is proposed in the bill to address the risk from exposure to multiple chemicals?
Again, that's a piece I don't know the specifics of. I know there's a component in there, which is encouraging. As we've been struggling over the policy debates here, they largely have been on a chemical by chemical basis. It is amazing how much we don't know about how our bodies react to these multiple chemical exposures and how they interact with each other, these synergistic effects, we call them. So just the fact that it's in there, I think, is very good because we've got a long way to go, a lot to learn. There is virtually no data available on these synergistic effects from mixtures of chemicals that we get exposed to.
Are there ways in which this bill will aid the development of green chemistry?
Yes, and there is some specific language in there that encourages green chemistry. But these principles that we're talking about, particularly driving manufacturers away from dangerous toxic chemicals and towards safer alternatives, is really at the heart of green chemistry. And so this is a good step in that direction. And what it does is it establishes a motivation for manufacturers to not use or produce toxic chemicals in the first place. Because if you can easily go and meet that safety standard that EPA will develop, then, you know, you're free to move about the country with your product. And that's really what green chemistry is about, is encouraging at the design phase benign chemicals rather than toxic ones. So I think that this will move us along the road that we need to be traveling toward green chemistry.
How does the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010 compare with European standards for toxic chemicals?
Well, the European system, which is called REACH, and that's an acronym for something I think that I don't know. I don't know the specifics of it, but there's a lot of similarities between this bill and REACH in that it requires manufacturers to upfront provide a lot of data, and it requires manufacturers to show this is safe before it goes out into widespread use. So in terms of fundamental principles, I think they're on the same page. Also, the access to data, the transparency, the openness is a really strong component of the REACH system. It's actually been very helpful because as we've been looking for data on chemicals that we're concerned about in Washington State, you know, Europe is more and more where we go for that data because of that system. So I'm encouraged. I think that there's good similarity between these bills and the REACH approach. In terms of specifics, I'm sure there's a lot of differences.
Who or what groups are in favor of the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010?
Well, I think the bills are new enough that I haven't yet seen folks staking themselves out in terms of I support or I oppose. This is the start of what's going to be a lengthy conversation, I'm sure, probably more lengthy than I would like. But generally, and I think this is one of the reasons we're finally having this conversation, even industry, which is most represented by the American Chemistry Council, has been calling for TSCA reform. I think that's a combination of wanting to get away from these state-specific pieces of legislation, which they don't like, the idea of a patchwork set of regulations out there, and a realization that they just can't hold the line anymore on saying that the current law is adequate. So everyone has been saying it's time to update TSCA. Now that we actually have some words to start looking at, you're going to see folks starting to shake out and answer that question you asked. My sense of this legislation is that the American Chemistry Council, there's going to be a lot in here for them not to like.
What are some of those things that you would list?
Well, I think just the fundamental sort of flipping of this paradigm so that they have to show that their chemicals and products are safe before they can be used in commerce, and that existing chemicals are going to go through this scrutiny just as new chemicals would. I don't think that that's going to be something they are crazy about. Also, the increased authority that EPA is going to be given to deal with these chemicals, including bans, is something that I don't think they'll be crazy about, as well as the narrowing of that confidential business information piece. It's going to be harder to keep their information confidential. So there's going to be a lot more transparency in this. So I think all of those things, I'm just speculating here, but I don't think those are going to be winners for them.
What is your overall evaluation of the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010 in terms of what it will be able to accomplish?
I'm pleased. It seems like a good start for this conversation. I'm both optimistic that we're having this conversation, that there are bills in both chambers. I think the starting place here seems like a good one. I was afraid that it would be a weaker starting place. I also am a bit skeptical, though, that we're going to see this actually get passed real soon. You know, I think there's some pretty big bills sitting there in D.C. waiting to be acted on, including climate and energy, that I think will happen before this one.
And how do you see the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010 specifically affecting Washington State?
Well, I would very much like to not have to sort of do the Fed's work for them. You know, this takes a lot of our time and energy. Just this last session, there was the second session that the legislature fought over whether or not to do something about bisphenol A, BPA. So we've been spending a lot of time and effort and energy, political capital, money, on having these chemical-by-chemical fights. And, you know, we'll continue to do that as we need to. But it's going to be much more effective to deal with chemicals, A, on a preventive basis, B, at a federal level, and C, in a systematic way so that you're not having these long, drawn-out conversations about one chemical while 200 others go unaddressed, but instead creating a framework that is just hard to do at the state level, creating a framework that is going to, you know, provide a protective umbrella over this whole thing. So I think it will allow us to turn our attention to Washington-specific problems that won't be addressed by TSCA reform. And there's plenty of that. The work in front of us on cleaning up toxic contamination, on preventing toxic contamination, that work is not going to go away anytime soon. So the more of it that we can trust is being, you know, adequately and responsibly dealt with at the federal level, that allows us to put our resources in those places where they're not going to be addressed by TSCA reform.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I guess the message I'd like to leave folks with is I know that as we hear about all of these chemicals and exposures and dangers to our family and our environment, it can feel like you have to become a chemist in order to sort of make choices and protect yourself. And that's not appropriate. You know, it's government's job, it should be government's job to make sure that those things that are allowed out there in widespread commerce that you and your family get exposed to are safe. And I guess the message I would leave folks with is the opportunity to make that a reality instead of a dream is in front of us now. This is, I just have to say, I am so pleased that we have a president, we have a Congress, we have an Environmental Protection Agency who think it's time to do this. And it's not going to be easy. I mean, the politics on this are tough. And it's only going to happen if people demand that it happen. And it's only going to be strong if people demand that it be strong. So I would say take heart that the opportunity is before us. Congress is willing to have this conversation at long last. But they really need to hear from us in order for us to get there.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You have just been listening to Ted Sturdivant, director of the Washington State Department of Ecology, speak about the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010, which was introduced into the U.S. Congress on April 15th. For more information, check on the web at www.saferchemicals.org. Again, that's saferchemicals.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.